What a great way to start the new year right, to have a chat with a great star. Welcome Ginger Rogers to Those Were the Days.
Happy, happy new year, Chuck.
Thank you very
much.
Isn't
it lovely? 72.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Let's start the new year right. I've read some Oh, I wanted to introduce you as a star of stage, screen, and pantyhose.
What about television? You love
television? What are you doing in town?
Well, actually, I've been helping the JCPenney people at their request to go around and talk about their wonderful pantyhose called the Gay Mode pantyhose, which is exclusive with JCPenney. Mm-hmm. And they are really quite exceptional, and I've never done a thing like this before, and I find it most interesting, and particularly when the product is something that's very fashionable, very up-to-date, and it's the only really pantyhose I've found that can keep up with me.
You're a pretty active gal.
Yes, yeah. I am. Uh-huh.
Well, did your JCPenney Gay Mode pantyhose hang well by the fireplace this Christmas?
Yeah, indeed it did. As a matter of fact, it holds quite a lot of good goodies, and especially the fact that it, after you use them at the fireplace with all the good goodies in them, you can still wear them, and they're just excellent, excellent. Only thing I have to say for them, I've enjoyed them before I was associated with them, and now that I've been associated with them, I'm enjoying them more because I'm having the privilege of using many different colors and many different styles that I otherwise wouldn't have been made, or they wouldn't have been made available to me, nor would I have known about them, because I get a particular style and generally hang on to that, and in a pantyhose, you find something you really find is good. You want it to, you buy a whole batch of them and take like cards, you deal them out to yourself in different shades according to the gown or outfit that you're wearing. Anyway, I've enjoyed it immensely, and it's been a very happy association, and I'm very grateful because this company is, you know, the JCPenney people have based their whole, this dear man, JCPenney, based his whole operation on the Golden Rule, and that's something to always start the year out with, the Golden Rule.
Right.
Yes, loving one, loving another as you do yourself, and being honest and just and fair and right, and it's been my experience that whenever you go to them with something that maybe may not have been exactly as it should have been, you take it back and they refund money to you, or they give you back, give you another one that does do what it's supposed to do. So that's the Golden Rule is quality, and I love quality, don't you, Chuck?
Oh, of course.
Quality in everything, quality in people, quality in things, and quality in your experiences. And that's what 1972 should mean to all of us, that we find more quality in our lives, in our understanding, and in our association with others, to be sure that this friendship and this you're bringing something to a friendship, you're bringing something to an experience that is quality and is dear and fine, and making someone more happy and more joyful because of an association in business, in a personal life, or in a social engagement, giving something of yourself in the highest and best way is always the good way, and I would say that's doing things on the Golden Rule type thinking and living.
Well, let's turn the clock back from January 1st of 1972.
I won a Charleston contest.
A Charleston contest.
A dance contest. I was a schoolgirl.
Okay.
And all the schoolgirls and schoolboys in Fort Worth, Texas, all over the Texas state, whenever this band, Henry Santry's band, moved from one city to another, he engaged himself not only in performing, but as a sideline, he also invited, and it was a good publicity gag for him, but it was also a community interest that youngsters in the various cities who were dancing this rather happy, gay, frivolous dance called the Charleston were given an opportunity to try and see if they could do it better than their neighbor.
Uh-huh.
So a little girl by the name of Ginger Rogers, who lived at 1510 Cooper Street, Fort Worth, Texas, entered into a Charleston contest at the Majestic Theater, Fort Worth, Texas. And she won the Fort Worth, Texas contest, Charleston contest. It was a dance contest, and I was a schoolgirl going to the public school in mm-hmm. Fort Worth, Texas. Mm-hmm. And having won that, I was invited then to be a part of the statewide contest, which was soon to be held
mm-hmm.
in Dallas, Texas. I won that one. My contest prize was 4 weeks down the interstate circuit at $300 a week that I had to go and perform to earn it, to get it handed to me. And my mother, who was a newspaper woman, joined me because her teenage child was not going to be playing in a theater alone and dancing in a mm-hmm. in a city unknown to her. So the mother of this child accompanied her. Her name is Leela Rogers, mm-hmm. and she accompanied her daughter Ginger through these various cities. Agents saw the act. Agents booked the act into other cities other than the 4 weeks that Ginger had won her contest prize as prize winner. And that was the beginning of a career.
When in this chain of events did you find yourself at the on Broadway in the musical Top Speed?
After I had played in the various vaudeville theaters
mm-hmm.
around the United States.
You were here in the Chicago, I think, at the
yeah,
the Oriental.
That was a little. That was about a year and a half after I had started.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I was here at the Oriental Theater with Paul Ash.
Yes.
And I was invited to come and stay 2 weeks, and they liked me so much that they asked me to stay another 2 weeks. Then they asked me to stay another 2 weeks, and then they asked me to stay another 2 weeks. And I was delighted because I love playing at the Oriental Theater, and I love the audience reaction, and
mm-hmm.
they were great fun. And Mr. Paul Ash, who was this marvelous red-headed, very masculine, fatherly type, handsome and darling and a good musician, was conducting the orchestra in the Oriental Theater. And he had quite a following, quite a wonderful following. So he liked the chatter that I did. I'd sing songs and I'd tell little jokes and then I'd dance
mm-hmm.
a dance
mm-hmm.
and I was held over here. It was a wonderful experience for me. I was learning my trade, more or less,
mm-hmm.
and I was perfecting my craft as an actress and as a comedian and as a doing vocals of songs. And my mother would write the material that I would sing. And so I would choreograph my dances and so on. So we had a little unit going between my mother and myself, so that when I was invited to go into the Paramount Theater in New York, Mr. Paul Ash was going to be playing there, and he asked me if I wouldn't come and play in New York with him, as I had done here at the Oriental Theater in Chicago. So I was delighted to have this invitation
mm-hmm.
because I had never been in the big city of New York as a performer, only as a very small child. And I went into New York. I played with Mr. Paul Ash. I was kept over 2 or 3 weeks with him. Then he moved from there to the theater in Brooklyn, the Paramount Theater in Brooklyn. I played with him there. That was the time when I was auditioned for a musical comedy that was just about to be, the name of the writers, of the composer, the name of the composer was, isn't that funny? Why should it escape
mm-hmm.
my mind? It's very important to me. they auditioned me in Brooklyn, or rather they watched the performance I did with Paul Ash, and then I was invited to do an audition in a theater in front of the producers, the composers, the lyricist, and the book writer. I was found capable of doing the role as they wanted it done, and I was chosen to play in Top Speed. That was my very first musical comedy. It lasted 4 months, which is not a great success, of course, but it gave me my first taste of a Broadway show.
Well, you got excellent reviews from the show.
Very good reviews.
I found a review by New York Times critic Brooks Atkinson.
Did you?
Who called Ginger Rogers an impudent young thing who carries youth and humor to the point where they are completely charming.
Well, isn't that nice?
And you've been doing that all your life.
Well, isn't that a nice review? That's very nice. I'm sure that someplace along the line I do have that review somewhere, but I was very steered to hear it again. Ruby and Kalmar, the name of the composers and the lyricist was Ruby and Kalmar. And the book was about boat racing.
Mm-hmm.
It was rather amusing. And I think, as I say, I was in it for 4 months. And during that time, I was seen by Walter Wanger, who came to see the show, with Mr. Zucker, who was the head of Paramount Studios, the film company, Paramount Studios. And they asked me if I would come out and make a test for a new movie they were about to make, in which I could possibly play the society debutante who was trying to take the leading man away from the leading woman, and the leading woman of the music the leading woman was to be Claudette Colbert. Mm-hmm. And the name of the show was The Young Man of Manhattan. And Charles Ruggles played with me in that first movie. Mm-hmm. I was signed to a contract with Paramount. I made 5 pictures for Paramount. During the time I was signed to do a musical comedy called Girl Crazy, a Gershwin musical comedy. And after that, I went to California, and that was my first California motion picture experience.
Uh-huh. Well, Girl Crazy ran for almost a year on Broadway.
It ran a year. Uh-huh. It ran a year. And my first movie in California was one that had a star by the name of Eddie Quillen. And I played his leading woman. And the name of that picture was I never can remember the name of that, and it always mixed up with, I have 3 names of things in mind that are all so much alike. One is Top Speed, The Tip-Off, and something, Top something, and I never can remember any of
those.
Top Hat, of course. I do remember that quite well, but this was rather an insignificant picture. Uh-huh. Made by Pathé Studios, and a man by the name of Charles Rogers, no relation, was the producer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I made the films with him, 2 or 3, and then I went over to Warner's, then I subsequently went to RKO, and there you are.
And there you are. Well, let's back up just a little bit. Over at Warner's, you made Gold Diggers of 33, and I'll never forget the great opening scene in that, where there you were singing We're in the Money.
Right.
What a beautiful opening that is.
Yeah, that was actually, if you remember it, they opened up on my lips.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The film opened up on my lips right here, and it moved away on a crane, the name of the instrument that pulls the camera way back into space and lifts it high, high, high above, so that you could see all of the girls that were involved in the number called We're in the Money. I was one of many girls, but I didn't do anything really but sing the song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the all of the action and the dancing was left for all of the, I don't know, there must have been 100 girls in that sequence. I really don't remember too much about it.
It's a good movie, though.
All I remember is that particular part I did.
Uh-huh. Next up was, not immediately next, but eventually next was 42nd Street. And you played Anytime Annie,
mm-hmm. the Society I think you'll Conscious find Chorus Girl. I think you'll find that 42nd Street was first.
Was before, maybe I'm talking about release dates. Maybe
yeah.
42nd Street, mm-hmm. was,
42nd Street
released
was made
later.
First.
Yeah.
And then Gold Diggers was was immediately made there or thereafter. At least that's my recollection of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did the spectacular teaming of Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers take place?
It was a very lovely happenstance, and everyone tries to take credit for it, and really doesn't belong to anyone because we were under contract
mm-hmm.
to the same company, mm-hmm. and it isn't as though someone reached out and plucked someone and said, "Oh, these two would be so chemically
mm-hmm.
matched." It just happened.
You were both
under contract to the same studio.
Put in a picture together.
Put in a picture together.
Hope
that's
that
all.
Flying Down the Rio might work.
Well, we were not the star of the Flying Down the Rio.
Uh-huh.
You
no,
know
but
that.
That was the big thing for you. That was the first time the two of you were teamed up dancing.
Yes,
to karaoke.
But I mean, uh-huh. how were we to know that this was going to end up being a team that would last through 11 pictures? I don't think you would know that just because two
no,
people
you would, no.
play a scene together.
But you.
But the one thing we did do was the karaoke. But the star of the picture was Dolores Del Rio and Jean Raymond, and Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers also ran. They were second. They were the supporting cast.
But in retrospect, they have emerged as the stars of that film and of 10 other pictures, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some great things. The Gay Divorcee and Roberta.
Top Hat.
Top Hat. Which of the...
Swing Time.
I always
Carefree,
hate to
Shall We Dance.
To ask a person what their favorite film was, but of the Astaire Rogers pictures, which one did you
Is
enjoy
your
doing? No, well, which may not have been your favorite, but which one did you enjoy doing most?
Let me tell you something. I have no favorites about anything
mm-hmm.
because it's very hard to have six children if I were so lucky as to
mm-hmm.
have six children. I don't have any, but if I were and you'd say to me, which one of these children do you love the most?
Uh-huh. Couldn't answer.
I wouldn't answer it because it would be embarrassing. There'd be something about this one that I,
uh-huh.
the quality in this one that I would adore, the quality in the other one that I'd hold very dear, and so on. I wouldn't say that, now that child, if I was a good mother, that is,
mm-hmm.
I would be an ingrate to say that I didn't really like certain. I like something of each of them because they had great meaning to me. After all, it was my learning, it was my career, it was my success, and I really can't look down my nose at them. I mean, it doesn't mean that the audiences felt that what I like was particularly
mm-hmm.
the thing that they liked the most. But I adored doing Night and Day, that dance in The Gay Divorcee. I liked doing Swing Waltz, which was to me a wonderful dance and most enjoyable, and we did it in one take. Which we did most of our dances in one take.
But with how much rehearsal?
6 weeks.
For each specific dance or for the picture?
For the entire choreographical numbers were
mm-hmm.
all were done as in a 6 weeks, sometimes 5 weeks. And then we would start shooting the principal story. The dancing would then be put aside entirely, and then would come the day for us to dance, and we would be sometimes 3 weeks without having touched our
mm-hmm.
foot to the floor, and then we had to go and warm up and rehearse the dance and rehearse it and polish it, because we were 3 weeks away from having done it. Does that mean anything to you? Do you understand?
Sure,
what I
mean? Can understand. Sure.
Uh-huh.
It must, But yet, of course, you were pros, and you knew what you were doing, and you had that 5 or 6
well,
weeks
yes,
of rehearsal.
Well, yes, it's
behind.
True. It's, oh, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
They were screaming about how long it took then. today, or in these past years, people have been taking 8 and 10 months and 12 months to make a movie. We had 8 weeks to make a movie.
We're making quite a few of them. Between all of these musicals with Fred Astaire, over the 11-picture career of Rodgers and Astaire, and I guess the final one came quite a bit later. The Barclays of
was the last. Broadway was the last film we made. As a matter of fact, it was the only color Technicolor film we made. And however, I must say, people come to me and say, "Gee, I love that blue dress that you wore." And what was that, Ginger? Was that top hat that you wore, that feather dress? And I say, "What color was it? What dress are you talking?" They say, "The blue one, the blue dress you wore." They didn't even see it.
No, but you see, they just...
Because it was in black and white.
They just imagined that that
imagined
had to be the color,
be
you know.
Blue, huh?
I think that's fantastic. I think it's great that...
Yeah, it's great, too, because
that
you
people who
they saw color without
yeah,
seeing it.
Yeah. Well, I think you provided it for them, then. The
it's
magic
interesting. It's
your...
a marvelous thought. I like the idea of seeing a color in something that is black and white, because I think I do, too, when I see something. I'm inclined to see that the sky is the density of... maybe aqua or something that probably wasn't at all. It was probably a very sad blue.
Well, bouncing around the musicals, you did things with Dick Powell and Pat O'Brien, like 20 Million Sweethearts.
And, I did.
Stage Door with Katharine Hepburn and Adolphe Manger.
Right.
Having a Wonderful Time with Doug Fairbanks Jr.
Right.
All kinds of things.
Lucky Partners with... Ronald Coleman.
Oh, boy, you've got the works there. There was one movie, I think, that was your one and only film in which you were killed. Upper World.
Upper World,
Yeah, right? Yeah, you died
know,
on the
know,
screen.
Do you know who the star was?
J. Carroll Nash?
Nope.
He's the one who shot you in it.
Well, he was the one who shot me.
Who
I was hoping you'd provide his name. No, I can't say it right off. I was hoping you'd provide his name.
No, I can't think of it now either. I jotted down
it
the
is,
note on
it. It is. I do have it in consciousness, and I will just like I came up with the name of the other one. Yeah. It just is, doesn't seem to be. It's some time ago, and that's very very much behind my thought. I'm afraid I don't think about these things, you know.
When the calendar rolled around in 1940, that was when the public had a chance to see you in your Academy Award-winning role as Kitty Foyle.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been quite an experience to be in a picture that won you the not only the nomination, but finally the Academy Award.
Well, it was a wonderful experience because the motion picture Kitty Foyle, Christopher Morley's play, book, rather, which they turned into a very good scenario. I didn't think they could turn it into a good scenario. I was really very surprised when they did, and then completely fell in love with the idea of doing the film. It was such a joy for me to do Kitty Foyle that I won't say that I would have been just as happy without getting an Academy Award, but I will say that doing that film, because I enjoyed it so much, the receiving the Oscar was sort of a double frosting on a great joyful experience.
Do you have a rapport with your audience now? When you're in the movies and you're making a film, you don't get immediate audience reaction. Now, if you do a little television or you do a play, you just appeared on Broadway in Coco, and you were in MAME and Hello, Dolly, too, recently. There you have an immediate audience reaction. You know on the spot that they are accepting you, that they're enjoying what you're doing. How, during the years you were making these great films, how did you know, aside from the figures, the numbers at the box office, and that how did you know that the guy sitting in the center of a motion picture theater was really enjoying your work? You ever sneak in the back door of a theater and kind of get the feel of the audience that way?
Actually, no. No, I didn't. I had to take my reaction from the people who were sitting around on the set. They end up being your audience. And when you can see, you can feel, because you know your friends around, you know the gaffers, the electricians, the different people who are paid to be there to take care of their particular line of work so that you may make the film. And if you listen, you will hear slight reactions of laughter, but they will be very minute because it can't be heard, really, but you will feel that. And that has to be somewhat of a guide, because when a take is over and the director says cut, you will hear those who are with you, and I mean, quote, with you in what you're doing, they'll go, ha, 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 you know, that was real, oh, that was funny, that was amusing, oh, and you could feel that they were ready and wanting to laugh.
And so these people then were
these provided provided that immediacy for you, and helped you a great deal in your timing of a joke or a situation and so on.
And but these people, I guess, were very used to seeing so much of this sort of thing that when they reacted reacted positively, that certainly did mean something.
Yes, it it does mean a great deal. And I find that being in the theater is very heartwarming to an actress, particularly to this actress, because I like to know what people think and I like to feel how they react to what I'm saying as a character on the stage. It's part of the, it's a great part of the joy of acting is, of course, I've always said, I think performing in the rehearsals is, it's very creative. And many actors agree that the greatest part of the acting job is in the actual rehearsal area, the rehearsal time, because that's the very creative time. And from then on, you are rehearsing your creativeness. Your creativity is merely rehearsed or repeated. And all of the inventiveness has gone, mostly because it has to. It has to be for all of your fellow actors. They have to know when you go from A mark to W mark on the stage, that you go there because that's the next thing you're supposed to do. You can't ad lib it, and if you do, you throw your fellow actors askew. So, but after that creative creativity is over, the joy then is to be on the stage and remember that today is another day, and this performance, even if it's your 110th performance, is still a new day. It's a new performance. It's people out there. There are people in the audience who have obviously never seen the play before. They wouldn't be there. And you have an opportunity of saying it on this day, and you've never said it on this day before. So you bring to it a sense of joy, a sense of newness, a sense of expectancy, because you're expecting them to be with you in what you're doing.
After Kitty Foyle, Ginger Rogers, you went into another film at RKO, Tom, Dick, and Harry, and then followed that up with Roxy Hart at 20th, and The Major and the Minor with Ray Milland. And there was another another Ray Milland picture after that, a couple of years later, The Lady in the Dark.
Yes, I remember.
And that was your first all-color film.
That's right.
I don't think there was a color film that Ginger Rogers did.
That was my first color film, and it wasn't my only color film, but it was the first color film I made. And then the, let me see, the next color film I did was one with Fred Astaire called Barclays of Broadway.
That was the next one, then?
That's the way I believe it was.
I did
choreographically,
Weekend at the Waldorf, and I'll be seeing you in between there.
Yes, yes, I've forgotten the way it, chronologically, excuse me, where the way it chronologically works, I don't really recall, because I don't remember them in that. I remember them for various reasons about...
Do you, you prefer a dramatic role or a straight comedy role to a... musical, a dancing, singing, dancing, or does it depend?
Let me tell you, I prefer the activity of performing. If it calls upon me to perform songs, dances, and chatter, I'm delighted. If it calls upon me to do dramatic, melodrama, drama, comedy, I'm delighted. I have joy in being in expressing, in being creative, in being active. I don't make a particular row or road that things I do must go down that road,
mm-hmm.
or else I'm not going to like them. So I can only say to you that the activity of my profession, in whatever form it takes to appeal to the public at that particular stage, is the thing that I thoroughly and happily enjoy. It's just very hard for me to say I only want to do comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard for me to say I only want to do drama. It's the variety that makes life sparkle and makes it more fun. So all I can say is come all to me, because I enjoy every phase of this particular profession I'm in.
Well, the variety of your career then has been a joy to you and a joy to all of us who have followed your career.
Well, that's nice.
Watched your talent on the screen, on the stage, and so forth. You know, last night I made a New Year's resolution to talk to the most glamorous star I could find during 1972. And here the New Year is only a few hours old, and you've made the resolution an easy one to keep. Thank you, Ginger Rogers, for sharing some great memories with us today on Those Were the Days.
And happy New Year.
Happy New Year.